You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're pleased to announce that this season, The Spurs Show is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Green King Sport venues are showing every single televised Spurs fixture over the 23-24 season. And with more than 900 sports pubs across the UK, it doesn't matter whether you're based in Tottenham or Tyneside, you can catch every single minute of the action. Keep an eye out during the season for events, offers, content and competitions that put you closer to the action. If you can't get yourself down to a match, why not catch it on Sky Sports in the next best place, a Green King pub. We'd like to dedicate this week's Spurs show to the memory of our friend, Pete Hayne, who sadly died last week. Pete was a regular listener to the show and a familiar face at all our live shows, where he took the opportunity to chat to our special guests, Spurs legends, many of whom he befriended over the years. He was also a guest on the show many times and brought great insight, such was his remarkable knowledge of Tottenham Hotspur and in particular the club's history, which was put to good use on his brilliant Tottenham History Walks. He often featured in the wider media too, and I especially remember a 3-hour Five Live preview show for the Champions League final in 2019, which involved Pete and I huddled round a little table in the Antwerp Arms with Adrian Charles. Pete was one of the most selfless people you could meet, and he was constantly doing invaluable, unpaid work for good causes, among them the Tottenham Hotspur Supporters Trust, which benefited from his commitment and wisdom. The outpouring of love that we've witnessed over the past week from the Spurs supporting community and beyond has been extraordinary, and I know it's been a comfort to his lovely wife Jill and to all those who loved him. On the Spurs show, we certainly count ourselves among them. Rest in peace, Pete. We're going to miss you very much.
Pete was a very welcoming person. Strange word maybe to use at a brief tribute, but not many people are when you don't know them in a social situation, you know. And I think the first time I met Pete was probably at a Spurs event, probably a Spurs show event. And he was incredibly welcome, open, friendly. And he was one of those people, as soon as you started to speak to him, you just thought you just knew him for years. He was always willing to contribute to work that we did. He produced some wonderful audio episodes of the History Walk of Tottenham, which obviously he did as a sort of live wandering around Tottenham event, which were absolutely wonderful. Always had time for people, incredible knowledge, incredibly passionate about other things as well, not just football. His wife, he loved talking about his love of beer, his love of music as well. He was just one of those infectious people that you always wanted to be around because he was generally interesting. But also, he liked to listen as well. He wasn't one of these people that said, you know, I do this, I do that, and then glaze over when you start speaking back to him. He was always fascinated and interested about what other people were up to as well. And that was what was so wonderful about Pete. I was lucky enough to know him just through the Spurs show, really. He used to come to our monthly events, be on the Spurs show, and was always great fun to be with, great fun to go and have dinner with afterwards. He loved his food as well. And He is absolutely going to be sorely missed. He's going to be one of these people you just assume you're going to bump into again at Tottenham. But sadly, we're not anymore. And wherever he is now, I hope he's looking down and enjoying the football that Tottenham are currently playing, which I know he was delighting in and has always believed in playing the Tottenham way. Pete, we're going to miss you so, so much.
Well, hello, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, Spurs fans around the world, wherever you are, and welcome to another Spurs show. On this edition, we're going to reflect on a dogged win at Luton. We're going to knot our brows at our growing injury list, and we're going to ask ourselves this extraordinary question. Are we in a title race? That's right. That's what we're going to ask. Yeah. Now, I've got three guests with me here who are going to help me with these thorny issues. Dom Powell is here. How are you, Dom?
Yes, very good. Yeah, very well indeed.
I saw you freaking out in the away end. I saw footage of you. No point trying to deny it. It was right there. Was that on the final whistle?
Yes, it was. As the players came over to celebrate with us, I was on the footage on the telly. My phone was going mental.
Yeah, brilliant. Well done. Andy Linden is back. How are you, Andy?
Well, I'm like old Tottenham fans at the moment, Theo. I am hugely peachy.
Delighted to hear it, Andy. And making her debut, Mariana Spring, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
So good to have you aboard. As you may or may not know, debutants are obliged to tell us about their first ever Spurs game they attended. Oh. Tell us about yours.
My first ever Spurs game was Alan Pardew's testimonial match at Palace versus Spurs, and I was 4 years old.
Wow.
And I went along with my dad, and dad was like, oh, we're going to Crystal Palace. And I remember thinking it was going to be a Crystal Palace. As you can imagine, I was sorely disappointed when we turned up at Selhurst Park, which is quite far from being a Crystal Palace. Yeah. And I managed to fall asleep by something like the 60th minute. But it was a really exciting game. I can't remember what the score was. I think it was like 4-3, or I think Palace won, actually. But that was my first ever game. And I've been going with my dad ever since. My dad is we're season ticket holders.
Great.
In the Upper West.
Oh, that's where I am. Whereabouts are you? I'm in, like,
is it,
I
think 501 or 503?
Okay, I'm in 3-something. Anyway, great to have you abroad. Aboard, not abroad. I'm a big admirer of your work.
Thank you.
Let's go straight into picking the bones out of that extraordinary victory, because this season so far, Andy's used the right term, peachy is the word, isn't it? Because not only are we top of the table, top of the league, not only are we unbeaten, but it seems like we've found different ways to win. And if ever there was a different way to win, it was Saturday's, whereas I saw it. I mean, we absolutely wiped the floor with them for about half an hour, 40 minutes. And then managed to shoot ourselves in the foot, blood all over the floor, and then still won. What on earth? I mean, it just was, I mean, to talk about unrecognisable from last season, you were in the ground, Dominic. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I was. Firstly, it was a fantastic away end. The Oak Road stand, the away allocation at Luton is unreserved seating. So for the first time for a long time, when we arrived at the ground about 10 minutes before kickoff, there was a massive queue for the Spurs end because people were trying to get in to get their spot, like it was in the old Terrace days.
Right.
The game was fantastic. At one stage, someone looked at their phone in the first half, and I think we were over 90% possession.
Yeah.
And even then, having had the man sent off, I think we were 67% possession over the course of the game, and we played the second half with 10 men.
Yeah, yeah. And we were 81. At the end of the first half, it was 81. I don't think I've ever seen that. That's mad, isn't it? I mean, but it also begs the question, how come we weren't 3 or 4 nil up? I mean, Andy, there was some pretty shocking finishing going on, wasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Theo. Within 10 minutes, we could have been 2 or 3 up. I talked the first chance with Charleston had there, that was the most glaring. As it came across, he really positioned himself well, stayed onside at the back stick, timed it well, and I thought, go on, gonna nut this one in. What was he doing using his feet? It went, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but he scored about 4 goals for Tottenham. 3 of them have been with his nut. Am I wrong?
No, that sounds about right.
It came over, I thought, he's got this.
Yeah.
He's got this.
I mean,
you know, we could have been, I don't know, 3 up by in the last 15, in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, easily, yeah.
And the thing is, the second half, it all got a bit nervy. Very, very nervy. But I think you could have taken our chances. Could you honestly see them coming back from 2-0?
No, but of course we never got to that. And Richarlison, unfortunately, does look like one of those. We've seen it before over the years where you get a striker who is so low on confidence that even the most straightforward chance, and I keep thinking every time he scores, because he has scored a couple this season, I keep thinking, oh, he's great. The monkey's off his back. He'll be fine now because he's Brazil's number 9 after all. And he's scored a lot of goals in the Premier League, but he seems to plunge back into this terrible, it's like he's wading through treacle. And he's talked about it. He's talked about his problems. But Mariana, we'll talk about his problems, but what went through your head when Bissouma threw himself to the floor and got that, that red card? It was absolutely, it was shocking, wasn't it? What did you think?
I mean, I was having one of those. I really, when we got to half time, I was thinking, oh no, this has got classic Spurs written all over it. We've missed like the most obvious chances in the first 10 minutes. We've had Bissouma, who's one of our best players, kind of sent off for something really stupid. And this is it. And we're going to lose. And it's going to be kind of no end of just like rubbish about Spurs for the next kind of few weeks during the international break.
Yeah.
So when we didn't, I was just absolutely amazed. I mean, it felt like the most sort of satisfying victory for that reason. And I think as well, because I was at the Liverpool game and I don't know, you just had that feeling that because of everything around the VAR decision, kind of all eyes were on the officials, especially in relation to the Spurs game. And so you just felt like, oh, Bissouma, why have you done that? Why have you done that? And I mean, we knew all about, in my job, I spend quite a lot of time investigating online trolls and everything else. And I'd actually noticed a lot of the stuff that Udoji had got around after the VAR decision. He'd had loads of horrible online abuse.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, you just sort of thought that the team might be more alive to the fact that maybe the ref would be paying sort of special attention to the decisions they were making. So it just seemed like a really silly thing to do. And it's a shame for him to kind of be suspended for the games that he is because he's playing so well. But I can't complain that we won. So I feel like if we'd lost, I'd feel more upset about the red.
I mean, that's the thing. He's been absolutely, one of, you know, a lot of amazing performers this season. He's been so pivotal. He's played all the games. He's been absolutely brilliant, Bissouma. I really do think he seems to be able to do everything. And it just makes you wonder what the hell he was doing not playing last
bench.
Season. Yeah, insane. Insane. But when he did that, you just saw, I mean, he'd already secured himself a suspension by getting a 5th yellow card in 8 games. He was already due for a suspension, but now he gets the red card suspension, which I think is 2 games. And then when he comes back, he goes back to being on 4 yellows because that became a red. And then next time he gets booked, he gets suspended again. So it's less than ideal. But as you say, Mariana, you are an expert on online trolling, conspiracy theorists, and all of that sort of thing. What did you make of that aftermath of the Liverpool? A lot of Liverpool fans, obviously, they wanted the game replayed, but a lot of people saying there is. I mean, Asif Kapadia, a very respectable international Oscar-winning film director, you know, a man not known for his hysteria. He said on Twitter that he thought there was a conspiracy going on, an anti-Liverpool conspiracy. What did you make of that, Mariana?
I know there was an awful lot of that, and as you can imagine, I had quite a few people sending me messages saying, can you please investigate what's going on here? I don't know. I think in some ways it was quite helpful that they released the audio because I think it became quite apparent that there was a failing in, you know, there was a failure of communication. It wasn't that complicated. And often you find this is the case. It's a mistake rather than a kind of deliberate decision to do, you know, to do someone out of a goal or whatever else. I have to say that I kept thinking, I was having many flashbacks to to Sissoko's
if we're going
to replay this game, I'd have to replay the Champions League.
I mean, the scope for whataboutery in football, bad football decisions is just endless. And I mean, they really did get hysterical. But I had to keep reminding myself, if I'd been on the other end of it, I'd have been hysterical as well, probably. But I still thought we played very well in that game. And if it'd be 11 to be 11, I'd have backed us to get a result anyway.
Yeah, and I found as well quite frustrating. My TikTok algorithm is very Spurs-oriented at the moment. I was getting a lot of content also from Liverpool fans and from Arsenal fans. And I found it quite frustrating, that narrative that, Spurs couldn't even beat nine-man Liverpool. Yeah, and it's really hard to beat a team when they bring on the entirety of their defensive capability. I just don't think that that's a really very valid argument to make. So it's quite satisfying. Fine to say, oh look, we won at Luton and we have 10 men.
Yeah, I agree. Dom, I don't know if you watched that terrible, terrible football match yesterday between supposedly two of the finest teams in the land, Manchester City and Arsenal. But it was absolute. It's what I mean, dollop, I think, is a word Andy sometimes uses to describe poor entertainment. It absolutely was dollop. But watching it, I found myself thinking, hold on, we could be in this. What do you reckon?
Yeah, well, I think I'm keeping my feet on the ground, but certainly yesterday, because the thing with us is that we have had some injuries over the last few games, players that haven't been available to us, and we've carried on. There was a lot in the commentary yesterday of that game. There was a lot of excuses being made by the commentary team saying, "Oh yeah, but Liverpool, but Arsenal have got players out, and Man City haven't got their best players." And I was thinking, "Well, we haven't had our best players, and we've kept going." So yeah, there definitely has been a drop off from those two sides, and we're in the position that we're in the best position we can be in at this stage. I'm a strong believer in enjoying the journey and not just focusing on the destination. And so while it is going well, I'm really just enjoying the fact that we are top at the moment and we haven't lost, and not trying to fixate too much on what's going to happen in May kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, Andy, I've been worried about the thinness of this squad even before the injury started to happen. And we lost Perisic and then Solomon. So that's two of our attacking cover. But then you look at Hill. I mean, with Postecoglou, you never know. He could get a tune out of any of anyone. You never know who he's going to. And he's been very impressed with Brian Hill in training. So maybe Hill will come to the fore. I think they're saying that Johnson will be fit again after the break, so that's good. Obviously, we're going to lose Bissouma, but I don't think Højbjerg is as good a player as Bissouma, but whenever he comes in, he certainly does a job, and the next two games are less taxing than the last two in terms of the opposition. How concerned are you, and do you think we're in it, Andy?
Well, yes, I agree. I think Højbjerg, as a stand-in, look, he's fine.
Yeah.
No, he's not. He hasn't got the attributes of a Bissouma. But look, for a Fulham game, he should be fine. We have had injuries. We're losing all our wired men. Yeah. I was panicking. I thought we might bring Cliff Jones back.
He could do a job.
He could still do a job now.
Yeah. He's super fit. I know that.
Yes, we are a bit thin on the ground. We might bring something in
January,
possibly in Jan. I can't see us buying too much.
No,
and I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Well, the only thing I think also, we talked about the wide players. We do have some cover there. So although we've lost Perisic and Solomon, we've got Johnson and Brian Hill to come back. In the midfield, as we say, we've got Højbjerg, who's not bad. He gets into most Premier League teams, no problem. So I think, you know, as a stand-in, as you say, he's fine. And Skip's actually fine as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, Sarr is playing brilliantly. You don't want to lose Sarr and Bissouma. But I tell you the area that most worries me, and that is central defence. Because if you look at Romero and Van de Ven, we've suddenly, all of a sudden, It seemed to happen to Arsenal this at the beginning of last season, where all of a sudden, out of nowhere, after years of what the hell's going on in the middle of our defence, we suddenly got one of the best central defensive partnerships around. You wouldn't swap them with any other team, I don't think. And but if you lose one of them, then you are looking at a problem. What do you think, Mariana? Do you think we might stay in this race?
I was going to say that the other person who I'm really excited for when he comes back is Bentenker, who would be
great. Yeah, of course.
It's a shame he's not back. It's a shame he's not back quicker, because he's such a good player, or was looking so good before. I don't know. I always feel like, as a Spurs fan, I'm reluctant to have any, like, I don't want to sort of jinx anything. And I can't even believe, I mean, the idea of thinking about the end of last season and just how sort of dreary it was, the idea that we might just like finish fourth even and just have Champions League and it not be a horrible experience, and like us kind of play really exciting football, feels like enough. But obviously, like, it's incredible to even be having the discussion that we might. I mean, I think that's the thing that I've just liked so much about this season. And I feel like, I don't know, I've kind of been to Spurs all throughout, like when I was at university and when I was at school, and particularly sort of now going regularly with my dad and sometimes my mum as well. And I kind of, like, I just feel like I really enjoy watching Spurs in that way that I just haven't felt for ages. And I'm kind of just like grateful enough for that.
Yeah, those are wise words. It's a good idea to remind ourselves of that. It's what Dom said, and is that we should be, let's not get carried away. I mean, I was on the radio and I said I would say we're getting cautiously carried away. I would say that's how I would put it, because, why not get a bit carried away about a title race? But let's, you know, we would have settled for this, wouldn't we? We would have settled for this, playing this well, this entertainingly. I mean, there hasn't been any. I mean, you looked at that game again. I mean, I don't want to go on about it. Man City, Arsenal, that was absolutely
boring.
It was dross all the way through, wasn't it? And we haven't had any game. Even Saturday's game, I would say Saturday's game, because of the second half and the situation we were in, maybe that was the lowest quality, but it was still totally compelling. Mm. And we came, you know, it was only 0-0 at half-time when we had 10 men. We won it in the second half with 10 men. And what a great finish from the lad Van den Ven. What a hero he's become so quickly. But, you know, you can say the same of Udogie, brilliant. Porro's come to the fore. As I said, the central defenders, the central midfield's been incredible. Sonny's been scoring for fun. You know, you can just go on. I mean, Kulusevski's rediscovered his best form as well. I mean, the Postecoglou is some kind of miracle worker, isn't he? He's really, it's quite spooky, actually. I think he might have something of the supernatural about him, possibly. For premium content, including a daily news show, ex-player interviews and original documentary series on Spurs, go to patreon.com/Spurs Show and support our show in the process. And there's Spurs Show merchandise too, including a new Postecoglou tribute t-shirt and a host of other eye-catching garments and accessories. Check them out and be the envy of all your friends. Our monthly live London shows are up and running. This month, on October the 25th, we've got the return of Bobby Davro, who was hilarious last time, and he'll be discussing his all-time Spurs 11. And on November the 22nd, we've got David Howes coming in, and our show last month with Gary Mabbott will be released this Friday. Mabsy was brilliant, as usual. You can sign up at Spurs Show, at season.spursshow.net, and you can come along to each event with a couple of mates for the price of less than a coffee. Follow us on Facebook X and Instagram, and leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you ever so much. What do you think about the January window, Dom? Do you think we might do business? And if we do, what would you prioritise?
I'm not entirely sure of the players that are out there. And I think it depends on the players that we've had back. If Kulusevski's back by then, and if we haven't had the injuries, I think perhaps we might need somebody else in midfield, because it's the African Cup of Nations. And so we'll lose Starr and Bentenker for as long. So I'll be cheering.
Not Bentenker, Bissouma.
Yeah. I apologize. Yeah. Slip of the tongue. And so I'll be cheering on whichever team that their national teams are playing against.
Because I want them to take an early exit. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think Bissouma plays for Mali, who don't generally do that well. Saar plays for Senegal, who do have done well in the past. Of course, we're at the World Cup. I forgot. I mean, Bentenker was a good shout, Mariana. He is top class, and he actually could, you know, possibly muscle his way into that midfield if he hasn't been too ruined by this injury. I mean, I look back over central midfielders that we've had over the years. who've been brilliant until the injury. I mean, Sandro's a great example of that. He was so good, and then he got an injury, and he was never, ever the same again. Scotty Parker was such a good player in his first year. I think he won Footballer of the Year in his first, and he was the first name on the England team sheet, but he just was ravaged by injury. And in that position, it can happen. So I'm desperately hoping Bentancur comes back and isn't diminished, but sometimes they are. What do you think, Andy, about the possibility of going for Ivan Toney?
Yes, he's, I've always rated him. I think he's a clever forward. He's strong. He can also take a penalty.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
But I can't see us spend. Can you honestly see us spending 70 mil on him, though?
Well, that's what it would take, because everyone would be in for him, won't they? And you do wonder. Yeah, I mean, he would have his pick. I mean, apparently Brentford are happy to sell him, but they will want about 70 mil.
I'd say 70 mil. But I love him at Tottenham. As I say, I think he's a good thinking player.
Yeah.
Look, unless Postecoglou's got something else in mind, something down the line, it all depends. Will Levy spend 70, 75 mil?
Yeah, I mean,
that hasn't played for 6-7 months, who may not be 100% fit. I'm just speculating.
I mean,
who else is out there?
In that position, he is the outstanding available candidate, isn't he?
He's got all that Prem experience.
Yeah.
I'm wondering whether we go for a forward summer during the summer, and we try and get, say, a centre half in. As you were saying, look, if anything happens to the two boys now, that is chemistry between Ramiro and Van der Ven.
Yeah,
we could end up relying on two 18-year-olds, which would be brutally unfair.
Yeah.
There's a lot, we've been talking about Dorrington's going to be very good as well as
Phillips.
And we've got the kid, Donnelly, who apparently my son's a big, he's in youth team football, and they are seriously bigging this kid up. He's good. He's only 18. He can play forward. Or he can play midfield. I don't know. You probably know this, but
well, he's a real touch player, isn't he? He's one of those. But again, some of those don't come through, do they? I mean, you think all the way back to people like Alex Pritchard, and then who was the one who ended up in Portugal running rings around us last year for Sporting Lisbon?
Yeah, but again, look, you're right. I know we've only produced Harry Kane recently, but if you go back in time, Hoddle. Perryman, Phil Bill, if you want. We did produce players. We did.
Yes.
That 80s team, we had so many. God, I know I'm going down memory lane here, but I'm hoping, look, the under-21s and the under-18s are doing really well. But they're top of their leagues as well, so.
Yeah, we've also got, I mean, those ones you mentioned, they're all knocking on the door, we are led to believe. Phillips, Dorrington, Donnelly, and also there's Belize as well, isn't there, the Argentinian, he's brought him on the last couple of games. He obviously thinks he's kind of ready, and he wants to get him some minutes to get him, and he certainly celebrates with the team. Feels like part of this team, doesn't he? He's only very young. He's very new to this country. Did you notice that? He's absolutely loving it at the end of games and throwing himself right into the celebrations, which is great to see. I mean, that's one of the things that
the players are embracing his ideas. The great thing about Postecoglou is it isn't just a football that's being played through the lines. It's what he's done. He's united everything. He's made this feel good back to that. It feels actually like we're a club reborn.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. I mean, over the years, whenever you've watched them, and God knows we've watched them a lot of years, oh my God. But one of the things you really learn is exactly what you just said, is that you watch it, you can tell when they're happy. And it seems so. It seems like such a simple thing to say, or it almost seems trivial, but it is not trivial. No. You see teams come out, you see them play, and you can tell when they're happy and you can tell when they're not happy. Under Conte, not happy. Under Mourinho, not happy. Under Pochettino, except at the end, when it all went really badly pear-shaped, they were so happy. He just changed the whole atmosphere, the whole spirit of the place, and they will play better when they're happy, and they'll enjoy winning more and scoring more when they're happy. When they scored under Conte and Mourinho, you felt like it was immense relief was the dominant emotion, whereas now they're so jubilant. And they're so together, aren't they? And as I say, he's only just come in. He's a kid who's just come in. And they've obviously looked after him and integrated him really quickly. And it's interesting. It's fascinating.
You notice the... I really started to notice the sort of... I was asking someone about this at the weekend, but the social media strategy of the players, I don't know how many of them you follow on Instagram, but they all will put out, like, even the players that come on for, like, 2 minutes will, like, post a kind of gallery of pictures. Everyone will comment on each other's pictures. And, you know, some of that is because it's good for sort of boosting the morale amongst the fans, I guess, but also because they clearly, like, are loving it. And like you say, even players who come on for, like, no time at all will get so stuck into the celebrations. They're like... And you think, I don't know, maybe people like Royale or Ben Davies or would feel a bit sort of like gutted that they're not starting all the time. But actually, clearly, Postecoglou has kind of fostered this environment where they feel like they're kind of like involved and that they're kind of all responsible for the win. And that's just, I feel like I haven't seen Spurs feeling like that, since the kind of original Pochettino years.
Yeah. And actually, when Pochettino came in, that transformation was apparent then, wasn't it? Because we'd had the miserable times under Sherwood. I don't think they were happy under Sherwood. They certainly weren't happy. Don't laugh, Ed. They certainly weren't happy under ABB. I think he was not a happy coach, you know. And well,
I've stopped cutting myself. No self mutilation there anymore.
That's great to hear. I'm sure we all relief is the emotion we're now all experiencing here at that. I have to say, talking about the January transfer window, I was going to say that under Redknapp, there seemed to be quite a lot of happiness and esprit de corps. He seemed to get them all up. But and I'm suddenly thinking about that January window under Redknapp, where we did seem to be in the running up the top of the table. And we thought, will Levy do the right thing, spend some money and just spend that amount of money that might get us over the line here? And he bought Ryan Nelson, was that his name? And he bought Louis Saha. Yeah. Both of them, I think, I think they both came completely for free. They were just knocking around. They were just sort of hanging around outside White Hart Lane. He spent nothing. And, of course, everything went, absolutely everything fell apart. By the end of the season, Redknapp had gone, sacked, actually, or at least had his contract not renewed. And you just think, is this an opportunity maybe in January if we're still in it? Because, you know, as we've said, there's just certain areas where we could just do with a little bit more cover. You know, if they brought a centre-forward and maybe a wide player and maybe a centre-back, that would be enough, I feel, to really actually give us a squad that had comparable depth with the other big teams.
I mean, I was going to say, I'd like to think that because despite the situation with Paratici, he's still allowed to work as a
consultancy
work, and he's and we still see him at the games because he's been sitting in the away end, so I like to think that he's still got his eye because people like the goalkeeper who none of us had ever heard of, and he's brought him in from Italy.
He's been brilliant, he's
fantastic. So I'd like to think that Paratici's still feeding some names through, and that if we do bring someone in January, it might be somebody that nobody's ever heard of, but that they know that there's quality there.
But how totally mad is football that Troy Paratici, he's been done for false accounting or something like that. Don't quote me, lawyers. I don't know what I'm talking about. Allegedly. But I don't know what he got done for, but he certainly got done. That is for sure. Big time. Like a lot of the other people involved at Juventus who are habitual offenders, of course. So he's been banned from working for I don't know how long it was for. So we've had to let him go. He's brazenly sitting in the away end and acting as a consultant. What is the difference between him acting as a consultant and him acting as a paid employee? I can't see any difference whatsoever. Of course, we're all absolutely delighted about that because this season we've really seen the fruits of his labour, because some of these players that he got, you know, like you say, yeah, the goalkeeper has been, Vicario has been absolutely, he has been flawless. I mean, he's been incredible. He's been able to do everything. And Udogie, who we didn't really know, we heard he was good, but he's come in, he's been absolutely fabulous, you know. And you just think, brilliant work by Paratici. Easily, it would appear, the best director of football we've ever had. Trust our luck, he gets banned, but hold on, he's just still there under a different... How are we getting away with that? What football is most bizarrely... It's like Man City getting done for 150, whatever it was, breaches of the financial fair play rule, and then they just say, yeah, anyway, we'll get round to that later on. You go, win the European Cup and carry on winning the league, and I'm sure we'll get round to that at some point. Football governance is an absolute joke, isn't it?
Yeah, it's cool.
I mean, what do you make of it, Mariana? You report important things for serious organisations.
I don't know. I feel like with my BBC hat on,
yes,
very much like I don't know. There's some like important investigative journalism generally that needs to be done about a lot of the way that football is run, and a lot to do with the kind of huge amounts of money that are changing hands and the way that it all works. I do find it quite sort of perplexing, and it's not an area that I investigate, but kind of understanding how it is possible for Paratici just to sort of still be there. Like, it kind of seems like, I mean, it makes it feel like, oh, it's quite unaccountable. Like, basically, people can do whatever they want and they can essentially sort of continue on as business as usual.
Do whatever you want.
And I feel like if it was another club, we'd be being like, well, that just shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah, I think we would. I think we'd be saying, instead of laughing our heads off about it, we'd be going, what the hell's going on here? Are there no rules? Can everyone seems to be able to do whatever they want. And it's really, as usual, as I'm sure this is one of your mottos, it's follow the money, isn't it? It's about the money.
Yeah, it's follow the money. And it's very sort of, it feels very opaque football, I think. You know, I know quite a lot of investigative journalists who look into all things dodgy around sort of clubs, around gambling, around sponsors, around everything else. And it is just, it's, you know, it's a very rich industry in lots of ways. And that makes it really hard. In some ways, you could probably draw comparisons with me investigating the social media companies that are big and rich and impenetrable and not very transparent. The same thing kind of applies to the clubs, but it's not always. And it's very unclear. It's a bit like, you know, I'll investigate something bad on one of the social media sites and then they'll just continue like normal and you think, oh, well, that was that then. They're quite similar in some ways.
And these governing bodies, UEFA, Premier League, whatever it might be, FIFA, they say, oh, we've got these rules and you've broken 150 of them, or you can't hire him anymore because he's broken rules at another club, bad ones. And they go, yeah, all right, yeah, whatever. It's like a really ineffectual sort of teacher or parent, isn't it? Yeah, yeah, okay, great, yeah, don't worry about it. We just carry on doing whatever we want. And then, you know, the governing bodies just think, well, we don't want to upset them too much because they've got all the money. Supposing they all cleared off and set up their own thing, which, of course, very nearly happened recently. All the rich clubs, you know, a couple of years ago, nearly just set up to UEFA, do one, we're going to do something on our own. So, again, it's just the money talks, doesn't it? Just like it does in international football. I mean, all, you know, buying World Cups and things like that. Still, never mind. The football's been great, hasn't it? That's all. I mean, if you're a Spurs fan, none of this stuff is going to upset us, is it? Because it's so good. Who else do you see as a danger, Andy, in the race? If you look at, obviously, Arsenal and City, I imagine the bookmakers have got them you know, comfortably ahead of us. Maybe Liverpool as well, I imagine, are ahead of us. Do you think anyone else could muscle their way into this situation?
Yes, quite possibly. I really wouldn't rule out. I mean, you've said it. I think it is a case of City, Arsenal, Liverpool. And I think there's four or five other clubs now fighting. Look, Newcastle fighting the top four. Yeah. Possibly Tottenham. We'll just throw that in. Because I don't want us to get ahead of ourselves. I wouldn't be a Tottenham fan if I never had a little bit of self-doubt. We're in the race at the moment. I think you can't even rule out Chelsea.
Yeah.
Funny old chick, like even Villa are capable. Yeah. I just feel that at the moment, our project, if we can call it that, is still very much in its embryonic stages. We look at Arsenal, they're 3 years down the road, guys. We're not even 3 months. Yeah. And look at this. I think if we can get, I don't know, top five, is it five now that could get?
Yeah, it's probably going to be five this season, yeah, to get
and, the Champions League. An FA Cup run, I would love to see Postecoglou take the FA Cup seriously.
Yeah.
I actually do believe.
Can you imagine poor Harry Kane
yeah.
That would be the story, though. It would
be an old shape. It would be. Kane gets to the final and gets beaten by Labour Q.
You've
written the script. I suppose we have got an outside chance, but I just feel that, we could get top four. It's just too early. We're no more come Jan, I think, but we engage where we're going to be.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think, Dom? Where do you think we're likely to end up?
I think unless we get some catastrophic injuries and or more sendings off, I think we're certainly on course for a top four, top five finish to qualify for the Champions League. And because I think from this position, it would be pretty catastrophic if we finished outside the top five, because what are we about a fifth of the way through the season now? We're top, but there are other teams around us with bigger squads, and as Andy was saying, that are further on into their project. I think an important thing will be at the moment it is going really well. I think it will be a test of us. If we do lose a game or lose a couple of games, it will be important to see how we respond and how Angie's able to respond to keep us on track. Because it's my dad was saying this morning, he said he's possibly a little bit of a pessimist. He said, Angie's doing great. He said, but it's going well. Let's wait and see what happens if it stops going quite so well and see how he's able to respond and how his press conferences go when we're not winning, perhaps. But I think... No, cool.
Well, most of the luck we've had has been good, I would say. Although on Saturday it looked like that had changed, but then you might say, well, that's not really luck, that's stupidity on the part of Bissouma. I hate to say it because I absolutely worship the man, but it did turn against us, and we were able to overcome that adversity. The strange thing about our situation is that Postecoglou was supposed to start slowly. He generally starts slowly. Certainly started slowly at Celtic and in Japan. I think he had a very bad first season. With Celtic, he had the first half dozen games were not good. I think, in Scotland, Celtic expected to win every game, more or less. Mm. They only had one tough opponent, as we all know. So I think when he turned up at Celtic, the fans were like, who the hell is this? And after the first six games, they were like, yeah, as we say, who the hell is this? And yet within, two or three months after that, they absolutely loved the guy. But so that hasn't happened here. It's a bit strange in a way that we haven't had any problems so far. The next two games are Fulham at home and Palace away, I believe. And then we've got Chelsea at home. Mm. On a Monday night. I'm sure that would be a lovely, harmonious, peaceful evening for everyone in North London.
I've been really enjoying all of the memes of Pochettino being like, he's infiltrated. He's like a...
Yeah, agent Pochettino, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean...
But I do think on Postecoglou, what you were saying... you notice that when he's answering questions at the pressers, it's almost like he can't quite believe how well it's going. Like he didn't really expect it to. And so he keeps sort of saying, well, you know, it's just the beginning. It's just the beginning for the moment when inevitably we sort of have a bad loss or it doesn't quite go as we hope. But even after the Fulham game, I went to the Fulham game, which was sort of quite disappointing to get knocked out of and just awful pen.
Yeah, I went to that as well. Yeah, it was that actually was a bit of a slump that night.
But then they did sort of, and even when the pens were happening, there was that bit where Sun sort of turned around and like really tried to get the crowd going again. Yeah. And it did just feel like there is a different mentality. I sort of have a bit of faith that even if we had a bad loss or some bad luck, they've sort of got it in them to, and we've kind of, I guess every game where we have a bit of luck or we play really well kind of fills up there their sort of, I don't know, their battery a bit. It's like, it now feels like if something bad happened, they've got a bit behind them to say, oh, you know, but we are capable of this, we can do it.
Yeah. I mean, do you see us seeing off Fulham and Palace, Andy, reasonably straightforwardly?
Well, I've been told by my family I've got to be effing positive.
Why? Why? Yeah. They were.
My son's actually downstairs writing it. Last time, I love doing a Spurs show. Sorry to be long-winded. I love doing a Spurs show. My biggest regret is at the end, I dread when you're all like, well, what is it score is going to be? What I obeyed what my family said to me last. I was positive, and you asked me when we were playing Southampton, at home, mind. My words to you were, oh, I think we'll have too much for them at home. We lost 3-1, I do believe. So I am going to use reverse psychology and say, well, Tottenham 1, Fulham 3.
Bloody
hell! And a down 1-1 draw at the Palace.
Can I just ask, when your family told you to be effing positive, that's basically you being effing positive there?
Well, it's reverse psychology.
Okay. Really. You reckon the effect will be positive at least?
Well, I am, and then I'm say, oh, I got that wrong.
You sound like my dad, who, whenever Spurs take a free kick or a corner, says, we never score off free kicks, we never score off corners, in this hope. And actually, at the Sheffield United game, we did score off a corner. Yeah. And he was like, I said, we never score off a corner. I was like, you say it every time, and almost all of the times, we don't score. I think we should beat Foot. I think after the game at Craven Cottage, we're owed a kind of... From that night, at least, we were playing not our best team, and I don't think that they looked...
That
if we'd been playing our best team, like, they would beat us. Like,
yeah,
they would be a 2-0 or a...
Yeah, I agree. I think we'd have seen them off that night with the full-strength team out, and hopefully... Of course, nobody knows what the international break will bring in terms of fitness and injuries. I mean, that every club's got that. Every Premier League club now has mostly international players, so we just have to keep our fingers crossed there. But so you see us beating Fulham, that's good. And what about you, Dom, the Fulham game?
Yeah, no, I agree with Marino. I think that because we didn't lose the match when we played the cup game over there.
No,
obviously, it was a draw. And he made a lot of changes because he's
10. I think he made 10 changes. Yeah,
that was his opportunity to look at the players and see them in the wild, so to speak.
Yeah,
I think we will have enough, as you say, pending. International injuries, fingers crossed we don't lose anyone that way. And I think it will be, it's quite a close to, quite a short turnaround, isn't it, between Fulham and Palace. We're playing on the Monday and then on the Friday of the same week, aren't we? Two Prem games which are not often that close together.
That is odd.
The curse of not being in Europe, we get all the Monday night games and the Friday night games, don't we? But no, I think we'll have enough to beat Fulham. And to be honest, I think we're going to beat Fulham and beat Palace. And I think we're still going to be top when we play Chelsea. And
And then we'll see. It depends whether they really have got their act together by then, or whether these two victories have been a blip. But they are starting to look quite good, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I mean, God knows Pochettino is a pretty decent manager. I think we can all agree on that. But anyway, let's not get too far ahead of time. Let's bring this to a close. Now we've got to endure the bloody boring international break. What a load of rubbish, isn't it? It'll be good for Postecoglou because we're playing Australia. So I guess he deserves that bit of good fortune. But for the rest of us, it's like, oh, God, we're going to have to watch cricket and rugby for the next 2 weeks. But I'd like to thank you all for joining me tonight on this very positive show. Andy, great to have you back. Dom, keep bouncing in that away end. Mariano, sparkling debut. Do come back. Do come back. It's been great to see you. Love your all of your work. And this is Theo Delaney drawing it to a close and saying, W Spurs. We're going to close the show with the words of Pete Hain, who sadly died last week, our great friend. And this is him talking with Mike Lee on the recent Top 10 Tottenham show.
Devotion and time and all that. Try and sum up what Tottenham Hotspur...
Well, in the words of Arthur Rowe, it means everything. It isn't just about the football, but I think I could go through every season and pick out a game that I would say, that I remember. I remember that as a brilliant moment. I remember that as a brilliant goal. I remember that as a brilliant set of circumstances. We've been mates where we had such great fun. I remember that because the car broke down and I had to go back into Liverpool the week after and pick it up again, you know, or I got stuck on a train station and couldn't get home, all sorts of things like that, you know. I suppose it gives you an almost like, you know, things can only get better, things will get better. Oh, shit, look what's happened now. We haven't really got a lot to moan about, but we do like a moan, don't we? I've loved Tottenham longer than anything in my life. And it makes me who I am.
Sports Social Podcast Network.